you concerned by the deteriorating relationship with China?
Yes. I mean, I'm not... It's funny you say that. Just even this morning, I've been reading more and more stuff about, you know, Hong Kong. And, we kind of sit down. We have to sit down and do a bit of a review and say, what does this all mean? I mean, obviously, I can't predict how it's going to end up, but it's raised the risk profile around certain parts of our business. I mean, we facilitate a lot of trade in the region. We facilitate a lot of money going backwards and forwards. So, you know, we need to sit and understand that. And then, of course, you know, we've got operations all around the region. So, you know, what does it mean for our offices in Hong Kong, for example? Should they be bigger or smaller and all of those things? So, they are big questions. And particularly for Australia and New Zealand, our home markets, we are liberal, open economies that depend on the free movement of people and goods. And, you know, if those things start to be less free for health reasons or geopolitical reasons, of course that's concerning.
ANZ China, you're responsible for ANZ China?
Yes.
I'll just read from the website. ANZ has been in China since 1986, is fully committed to China. Over the past three decades, ANZ remains one of Australia's largest investors in China. Do you see any of that changing?
I don't imagine that we, you know, I imagine we'll continue to be in China. I don't think that's under threat. I think, though, like everything, you're constantly questioning the scale and breadth of your operations in any country. So that's what I mean. We're going to sit down and think, well, what does it mean for our business? Our business in China, just to be really clear, though, it is to service the trade and capital flow in and out of China, mostly to Australia and New Zealand, but also to other parts of Asia. So that'll continue to be a great business. And somebody, you know, China's still going to buy iron ore and we're still going to buy lots of stuff from China. But the scale and breadth of that operation may well change as a result of this.
Or may well be reduced.
Yeah, look, and we were already seeing that, actually. If you spoke to most large multinationals who are operating and dealing with China, they already had, you know, I'm going back a couple of years, what they call a China plus one strategy. It had nothing to do with these recent issues. It was just the fact that China's becoming more expensive to operate in as the country develops. And so people were worried about having all their eggs in one basket. So they were moving plant and factories to Thailand and Vietnam and India and other places. I think all these recent changes is going to speed some of those changes up.
What's your view of the Belt and Road initiative signed by the MOU signed by the Victorian government?
Well, look, so we've been following the Belt and Road Initiative for a long time because of our business in China, and obviously a lot of our customers are beneficiaries of that. I mean, my understanding of the initiative, though, it doesn't sort of, you know, when they get the map out, it didn't really have Australia on it. It didn't quite reach down here. And I can understand people wanting to attach themselves to what looks like a pretty big spend on China's part. I struggle a little bit to understand how individual states can sign up to things like that as opposed to the federal government. So I can see the complexity in that. But I understand the attraction of, you know, wanting to bring jobs and investment into Victoria.
But both the United States and Australian federally seem to see it as something of a security issue, is it?
I don't know. I'm not. That's not my area of expertise. I mean, I saw it as, you know, it was an infrastructure play really about sort of recreating the old Silk Road and saying how can China, enhance its trade connections into the rest of the world. I mean, most of the focus of Belt Road Initiative is not into the Pacific or into the US, it's actually across Europe.
Yeah, but is it there to buy influence or buy control or to help trade?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think we'd be naive to think that any investment that, you know, in your own self-interest to enhance trade obviously buys you some influence in those countries as well. I think that's just, you know, those things go hand in hand as they have through all of human history. And as I said, you know, China's trying to reach out to enhance its trade reach. Does that give it more influence? Yes. Yeah, so clearly people have influence with their trading partners, just as we do, Australia has with our trading partners.
You think it'll settle down? I mean, the tensions are significant at the moment. Some are saying, and the Global Times, in fact, say the worst for decades.
It does feel, look, again, it's not my area of expertise, I'm just a boring old banker, but I, you know, it doesn't feel good right now, does it? I mean, there seems to be a ratcheting up as the weeks go by. Obviously, it's a very important year with the US election. That's going to be a massive sort of deciding point, I guess, whether Trump's re-elected, and that takes you down one path versus the alternative. So, look, I think we're just in a heightened period of uncertainty, Neil, and that means the sort of risk profile around the region and the world is just higher, and, you know, that's certainly what's on the minds of our customers.